Okay, let's begin. My name is Debbie Berndt, and I'm here with Dr. Robert Maldonado of Creative Love, and today is the call that you've all been waiting for. We're really excited about this. First time we're going to do a teleclass in this format, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to interview my partner in crime, Dr. Robert, and we're going to talk about the psychology of attraction and what makes a man fall for a woman. And we know that there's a lot of information out there, a lot of contradicting information, and you can get really confused with what's out there. And we just want to set the record straight from a psychological standpoint, from things that are actually tested and theories based on real psychology. So you can rest assured that this information is going to help you and be very grounded. And I'm really excited. Just a little bit about me. There's a lot of new people on the call. My name is Debbie Berndt, and I am the author of the book Let Love In, Open Your Heart and Mind to Attract Your Ideal Partner. It came out in 2010, a little while ago. And it really talked about the subconscious mind, which at the time I was doing hypnotherapy, and I talked a lot about how that unconscious part of us attracts us to each other, the people that we date. And it actually did the work, working with the unconscious mind. I did some work with shadow, which I didn't realize I was doing at the time, but it got me to where I was able to really have the ability to open my heart to let someone really great in my life. I was single till I was 41. I did all the dating workshops and read all the books that most of you have read. So I come from that perspective. I've been there, done that. Have been on the online match.com and all those places, and felt just as frustrated as some of you may be feeling right now. And so the reason I do the work is because I know that there is a chance for love for everybody. And I met Robert, and he was a psychologist, and he's going to tell you a little bit about himself. But when we met, it was like my roommate told me, she said, you know, Deb, you were looking for a needle in a haystack. You wanted this spiritual guy, someone who's attractive, someone who's smart and has it together. She said, I never thought you'd find someone. And look, here he is. And so here's tonight is to all of you women and men out there that are looking for your needle. You're looking for that needle in the haystack, that really unique person that matches who you really are, that you don't want to settle. And I think back and I wish I would have known this information sooner. So we're so glad you're here. And I want to introduce my partner and love and business partner, Dr. Robert Maldonado.
Great to be here. What an interesting topic that we're going to be talking about.
Well, you're a man, so you should know.
Well, I'm here as a psychologist, who also is a man, so you get two for one.
Ooh.
Two for the price of one. So my background is in clinical psychology. My master's is in clinical psychology, and I did a lot of work in Jungian clinical practice early on with people with severe mental health problems, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, manic, depressive, narcissism, and those are just my professors, right?
That's an old joke.
I need a drum. The drum.
Didn't.
Yeah. And then I got into. I did my PhD in counseling psychology. I was very interested in the impact that culture has on the development of our nervous system in our brain, and I worked with families and children, and got into autism and neuroscience and neuropsychology. I mean, I was very curious. I'm still, of course. But those early formative years were incredible because I accumulated a lot of knowledge. Then when I met you, this idea started to take shape that when we looked around, there was nothing that really helped people understand the psychology of love and relationships. And to me, that was crazy. I mean, why? Because it's such an important piece for us as human beings to be able to relate to each other and to love each other, to create great relationships and families, and there's no help. You know, a lot of the stuff out there, it's interesting, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's out there. It's interesting, and we try to keep up with the latest research and what comes out of these different areas, but most of it is not very practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't apply it like in your everyday setting to really help you develop your heart, right, and kind of open yourself to love and relationships. So that's kind of been my mission, is to bring some light to this area, much needed awareness, to create psychological tools for people to help them develop relationships, meaningful relationships.
Well, we're glad you're here, and I'm going to put on my cap of kind of the interviewer cap tonight. And basically, I know the questions that I wanted to know back before I met you. So basically, I'm acting as my, going back in time to my old self of what she wanted to know about love, knowing what was out there, the information I was getting, that really actually led me down the wrong path so many times. And, you know, our hearts, we want you to find love faster. We don't want you to waste another moment without great love in your life. So we hope tonight is going to open your mind and heart to a new way of looking at love, and we're really excited to share this with you. Now, this call is called What Makes a Man Fall in Love, and of course this is for men too, because I'm sure they're curious of how they fall in love, so I know it's going to be enlightening for all. And this call is really right for you if you're tired of following those dating rules. We see so many people say, I just don't know what to do anymore. This person says to do this, and this person tells me to do this, and it's almost like you're just so confused as to what the right behavior is. You're tired of changing yourself to what men want. That used to drive me crazy. I'd get all this information about what men want, and men don't like this, and men like this, and so I tried to twist myself into a pretzel to be someone else so someone would love me, and I wasn't being myself. And you really just want to be yourself. You want someone to love you for you. You find that you get confused, and this happened to me too, and it happens to our clients when we first start working with them, is, am I experiencing real love? Is this the real thing? Or is this just my old pattern coming up again? Like, is this really the right one? Or is it just my old neediness coming out again? We're going to answer those questions. And, you know, for me, I just kept thinking there was something wrong with me all the time, that I was so tired of going to workshops and working with my inner child. My inner child was like overworked, the poor kid, and just like digging into the past and, you know, dealing with daddy issues and my dad. And, you know, I just felt like I wasn't getting anywhere, and I felt very exhausted from it. And so if you feel that way, this is definitely something for you, and where you've kind of have this feeling where it's implied that it's your fault that you're single, that there's something wrong with you, this is definitely the call for you. And also, if you're interested in psychology, you know, there are some people that just really are interested in their psychology, learning about your psyche and not looking for just some magic, you know, magical attraction trick that you can do to manifest a man. You want to really know about yourself, so that the relationship you attract will last. And if you're ready to meet your ideal match this year, absolutely, this is the right place to be. And so we start off with the reason why we do this work is, you know, most personal development work comes from a therapy model, comes from that healing, something's broken about you, something's dysfunctional. And it's so ingrained in everything that you don't even realize that they're saying that. And for me, I just felt like anytime a relationship didn't work out for me, I was wrong and I'm doing it wrong and there's something wrong with me. And it actually made me feel worse. And it, instead of like self-helping me feeling more positive, it actually made me feel worse. And so I totally relate to you if you have that kind of idea that you feel like that's all you get. And the dating tips were, I felt like I was doing it wrong and I wasn't sure how to act. And I second guessed myself a lot. I would, you know, email them and then, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And, you know, this expert told me that you have to wait 3 days and I blew it with this relationship again. And a lot of the dating tips put the man on a pedestal, like he's the one to win. And you have to, if you're a good girl and you behave in the right way, then you get to, he gets to choose you. And so we want to take you out of that mindset, if that's kind of what you're feeling, because, you know, you probably don't think that you want to be that way, but that's kind of a lot of what's out there. And then, you know, this whole idea of I can't figure men out. Like if I just knew what was going on in a man's head, then I know how, what makes him fall in love. And, you know, you're just feeling confused and still alone. And so we're going to help you deconfuse yourself. Is that a word, deconfuse? So let's go to understanding how we create chemistry. Robert, how does a man fall in love?
Right.
In 5 minutes or less.
Yes, and in 50 words or less. And chemistry is a good place to start because most people think it's kind of a personal gauge that they use, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they feel that chemistry, they say, well, there's something here,
mm-hmm.
right? They kind of intuitively, they know this is a viable relationship. There's something going on. And if they don't, right, it's kind of, there's nothing. There's compatibility perhaps, They say we look good on paper, kind of, you know, everything matches, but there's no chemistry. I have to add this. This is not therapy. We're not talking in any sense of therapy. You know, Debbie and I use a coaching model, which is non-therapeutic. We don't believe that most people, they don't need therapy. They just need the right tools in order to kind of work on their mindset and their heart. So back to the chemistry, we see it from a Jungian perspective, right, that there is an unconscious mind, right? So the conscious mind is our ego and our persona. It's what we use to interact with others. So when I'm dating, When a man is dating, he brings his representative, of course, to the first date.
His mask.
Yeah. And he says, you know, I'm this and I do that and this is where I'm at. And there's that interaction, right, of kind of measuring each other out and all that.
And physical attraction and all those things that happen
yeah.
on that level.
That's right. All those things happen at the conscious level. At the unconscious level is really where the chemistry happens. And it's for most people, it's a mystery because they don't know where it's coming from, but they know mm-hmm. that it happens.
I feel this way. And
yeah.
What the word I used for chemistry was when I was single was flirty. I felt flirty with someone. I would feel like giddy and, you know, excited to be around him or wanting to see him again. And that's actually how I picked who I would date is, well, I didn't feel anything for this person, so they're not the one, but this guy I'm feeling flirty for. But the men I had chemistry with, or that flirtiness, were always the wrong people, the same type all the time.
That's right. So at the conscious level, we are aware of compatibility, and we can see it. You know, we ask the person, or, the man asks the woman, what do you like to do on weekends? What do you do for fun? What do you do, what do you do for work, all those things. And it seems to be a good match. At the unconscious level, though, that's where the chemistry happens. And so most men and most women are not aware of how they actually fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
So Jungian psychology gives us a model to where we can access that part of our psyche. That part of our mind that is actually producing the chemistry in a sense. And here we don't mean hormones and although those play in, of course.
Those are the effect of.
Yeah. But we're just talking in the way people use the word as an emotional reaction that attracts you to the other person.
And it's unconscious.
That part is unconscious. Jung called it, in a man, he called it the anima, which roughly translates into soul. Right? So it's the soul of the man. Because if you think about it, it's a very apt term, because it's that soulfulness, the soulfulness that allows us to connect to each other, right? So the anima as a psychological phenomenon, we can think of it as the archetype or the blueprint that a man has of a woman in his mind. What happens is actually he then, when there is chemistry, he is projecting that internal archetype onto the woman. So he may see her in this glowing light, in slow motion, and
hair blown back.
Yes, the angels are singing as she walks into the room, because he's projecting all this beauty and elegance and fine things
that, from his own soul.
From his own soul onto this mortal woman,
the mere mortal woman,
and of course. When the person is unconscious, that is, they're not aware of where it's coming from. They believe that this person, this woman, possesses these qualities. But, of course, it's not going to last.
We all know that. We lost that love and they disappear. What happened to that? The projection disappears.
Yeah, the projection starts to crack and you start to see that they're mortal beings like all of us.
Just a regular human girl.
And that's when people say, or the man says, I fell out of love with her, and then starts to wonder or, you know, look around the room to see where there's another woman that has those qualities, and on to the next one, of course.
And so we call it the inner Eve, for to make it simple.
That's right. The inner Eve is equal to the anima in Jungian terms. The inner Eve then becomes the center point for falling in love, because it's the initial attraction, right? As a man projects that inner Eve onto the woman, onto the physical woman, he becomes very interested, very attracted to her, and so wants to experience closeness and open up to her, right? But again, psychologically, it's the inner Eve represents the man's readiness to relate at that soulful, loving level.
So if he's not ready, that will fade right away.
That's right.
And it'll just be like an addictive, like, he's seeking that soul, but he's almost internally disconnected from it. And he keeps seeing it outside of himself, and he thinks it's in that woman. If I find the right woman, then I'll be connected to this piece, when he doesn't know that it's inside of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much like...
So it's kind of like a heavy burden, a woman... if you find a man, and I've had this experience where someone is so infatuated and you're just like, okay, you don't even know me. You don't even know. We've been on two dates and you're like over the top. So that would be an anima projection.
Yes, where the man is really experiencing the projection instead of the real person. Mm-hmm. And so the projection, of course, is great. It's fulfills all the fantasies and wishes that the man has.
And she can do no wrong, right? It's like that kind of, no matter what you do, they're perfect. And
yeah. So it's that infatuation phase.
Mm-hmm.
If then the man hasn't really developed further than kind of the external sexual attraction piece, once that starts to wear off, there won't be anything really to attach to the woman with, right? Mm-hmm. No, the projection will fall away, basically. But if the man becomes conscious of his anima, his inner Eve, and is actually in touch with those qualities in himself, mainly emotions, right? Then the relationship has a chance to develop further into romantic love,
mm.
right? That lasts longer beyond the physical infatuation phase.
And I know a lot of people talk about biology. You know, there's a lot of famous people out there that teach relationships, and they say it's hormones and things like that. What do you say about that when it comes to this anima? Because it's so I would think that the psychological piece triggers the hormones. So the hormones are more of an effect, and the cause is really the psyche, right? Like you were just reading, kind of like brain waves. You know, they don't cause anything. They're just the effect.
Yeah, I mean, technically in neuroscience, those are called correlates.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you see a woman, when a man sees a woman, there'll be certain hormones released in his system. That release of hormones and neurotransmitters correlate then with the attraction. But as every good psychology student knows, correlation does not mean causation, which means that because there are correlations doesn't necessarily mean that one is causing the other.
Mm.
It simply means they're occurring, co-occurring at the same time. Of course, there is something to that because we're biological beings, and everything we do, everything we think and feel is an electrochemical occurrence, basically. Mm-hmm. Any thought you have has to occur in your brain, and therefore it's a neurochemical or electrochemical event.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't take away its meaning. So mm-hmm. a lot of people that we've seen out there, they talk as if understanding the neural or electrochemical and hormonal events that occur when people meet, as if that somehow explains away the phenomena of love, right?
Mm-hmm.
They reduce it to these neurochemicals and they say, well, there, we figured it out. Well, that's ridiculous. That's completely ridiculous, because that would be like saying, because Shakespeare, when he was writing, his thoughts were basically electrochemical signals. That means that
his poems are just a result of hormones.
Yeah, there's nothing to that, and there's no meaning in mm-hmm. his words. So that argument is kind of a circular argument mm-hmm. that people fall into all the time, and they think that because they've found some correlates that they've explained away the phenomena somehow.
So hormones don't make a man fall in love, but they trigger the feelings in the body. That's all they do. That people can label as love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of not being ready to relate to the opposite sex. So what about a woman and her, we call her, like, she has an inner opposite too. The man has the inner Eve, the anima.
Mm-hmm.
The woman, what's going on inside of her?
Right. So a lot of, you know, what we saw out there was that there was a lot of programs that focused on change your behavior so that the man will like you mm-hmm. as a woman.
If you pay the bill or offer to pay, he's going to ask you out again.
Right. Or there are certain rules, social rules, that will help you kind of create a loving relationship if you follow these rules. Yes and no. I mean, that, of course, has some impact at some level.
Like if I was rude and obnoxious when I met you, you'd be...
Yeah, obviously.
I still think I was amazing.
Yeah, if you're rude and obnoxious, obviously...
My psyche wouldn't be in balance with who you were anyway, so...
Right. Or people that are angry, for example, have a kind of a masked resentment against the opposite sex... Obviously, other people are going to pick that up and going to run in the opposite direction, right?
So again, it's that behavior is really stemming. It's not the behavior to change. the behavior is actually the effect, again, of something on a deep psychological level of why you would behave a certain way. Why do you get too needy? Like a lot of people told me, oh, don't be too needy, act cool, and don't call, and don't, you know, you get that text and you want to reply, or you want to reach out to the person because you haven't heard from them in a couple of days. And it's like, it's not the fact that you texted them or not text them. It's the fact that what energy are you holding around it? It's not the behavior, but it's the energy. What's driving that behavior? That's what's leading you to the relationships you're getting. It's this, what's going on inside of you? What is your internal experience of needing that person to come in?
Right. Just as the man has the inner Eve, the woman has the inner Adam, which really, if we think about it, unconsciously, that's what's matching up mm-hmm. in a man and a woman. And that's what allows them to create a strong bond beyond the physical attraction. The physical attraction is always there, and there are a lot of hormonal and neurotransmitters involved in those things. But when we're talking about long-lasting, meaningful relationships, you have to go deeper into mm-hmm. the psychology of the human being. And that depth there, what we're talking about is the inner Adam and the inner Eve. And for the woman then, it's not about how she's behaving, but her internal understanding and awareness and relationship to her own inner Adam. Right, so for the man, it's getting in touch with his emotions, his soulfulness, the unconscious in a sense, the mm-hmm. deeper unconscious.
Creativity,
dreams, all that, and it doesn't mean femininity in the way a lot of people have talked about Jungian terminology too. That they make it out to be masculine and feminine kind mm-hmm. of principles. That's a superficial understanding of these phenomena. It's really that there are deeper levels that connect us to the unconscious mind in our individual life. So when a man, for example, is connected to that unconscious part of his mind, the creativity, the dreams, the emotions, then he's able to connect at that level with a woman that corresponds to that depthness.
Mm-hmm.
So from the woman's perspective, if she is looking for a deep, meaningful relationship, she has to get in touch with her inner Adam. And for her, it's kind of a mirror image, because externally, the woman is already in touch with her emotions and her intuition. So it's more about getting in touch with kind of the spirit in her.
Mm-hmm.
And Jung talks about it in these terms, that the anima is the soul, the inner Eve. The animus, the inner Adam, is the spirit. And so they kind of fit like puzzle pieces. Then.
Like the yin and the yang.
That's right. And so that's really the crux of it, that we're talking about internal processes deep in the psyche that we're all born with.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something you have to artificially create
mm-hmm.
or invent.
Like your ideal man, like visualize that type of thing. It's more of something that's already inside of you.
Yeah.
It's a vessel a container for, I call it the man file, or for a woman, man, it's his woman file.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does it get constructed in life? Like, is it?
Mm. Well, we can think more in terms of how is it expressed?
Mm-hmm.
How is it expressed externally? The internal work is one of, again, it's a natural process. So a person needs a certain amount or certain tools, I would say, to refocus their understanding of their mind and their heart. If you notice, most people are focused outward.
Mm-hmm.
right? Their
behavior and
exactly, and that's why a lot of them to a lot of people or to most people, it makes sense that your behavior is what you need to change in order to impact on your ability to relate to others. And there, of course, there is something to that. But when we start to understand the internal mind, right, our sense of the sense that we have about ourselves, our the way we relate to our own emotions, the way we interpret life's events, and we give meaning to those events in a very personal, subjective way,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes a very different experience.
It's like the filter we see, like the glasses that we see through the world, the filter we see the world through is from our own mind. And a lot of people think that there's like just everything's objective and there's good and bad and everything has its place and everyone looks at things the same way. And in a relationship, we know that people see the same behavior. One sees it as attractive and someone else sees it as unattractive. So how do you know how to behave? And so we have to go deeper. And, I love this idea of the readiness for love. And I just want to go back to, the question I hear people wondering is, so how did I get my inner Adam? Like, what is my inner Adam? How do I know it? I didn't even know I had an inner Adam. And then a man's inner Eve. And is it just... So you're saying that basically, if you don't examine this part, you're bumping up against and hooking up with chemistry by default. And so you're not conscious of these parts of you. So you're projecting, you're getting infatuated. And some people do get married and stay in these relationships, but then they kind of fade out and they don't really grow at all in those relationships. And then other people just stay single forever and they just keep dating the wrong person. And they feel like, if I just could act cool next time and not be desperate next time, or if I could just lose some weight and maybe then I'll find someone or change my profile. But this inner relationship, so what actually constructs the default? That's the question.
Right. So we're born with the inner Adam and the inner Eve, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to construct it.
Mm-hmm.
It's what Jung called an archetype.
Mm-hmm.
And an archetype is like a blueprint that it's already inherent in
mm-hmm.
us. But our personal experience does influence it.
Okay.
It influences the way it's expressed in the world, the way you experience it in your psyche, in your dreams, in your intuition and all that. One of the big things that we know influences the way the inner Adam plays out or the inner Eve for a man, are the parents,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's the first sphere of influence that we experience as children. We look at our parents as a couple,
mm-hmm.
and we see how they relate to each other.
So that goes into our blueprint.
That kind of colors and tones the way the archetype is expressed in us, or the way we feel it. Most of the time, it's unconscious, though,
mm-hmm.
right? We're unconscious of this process, but the unconscious is absorbing what we're experiencing in our family, then our peers, what we experience in school, right? That's usually where we start to develop our peer systems, and then our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And culture has a huge impact way beyond what most people think.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the water that we swim in, kind of the...
What's expected of women, what's expected of men, what's expected of marriage.
That's right.
How old you should be when you have your first child, right?
Yeah.
What it means to be single at 40 or 50, and people, what people think, that whole cultural
mm-hmm.
idea.
And it is different in different cultures, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some cultures, people marry very young. And they're expected to marry very young. In other cultures, arranged marriages are totally expected and natural.
Mm-hmm.
And in others, of course, that's taboo.
Mm-hmm.
You should fall in love like in the romantic comedies where you're
running to the airport.
You're crazy about this person and all that stuff. So those cultural expectations are there, and they're very powerful. And they're powerful because they're not explicit. Nobody sits down and tells you, this is what your culture expects of you. Right? And they don't give you a list of those things. But everybody knows exactly what is expected of them. Mm-hmm.
And what you even know in the family, there's kind of like that the unspoken rules.
Mm-hmm. So, according to Jung, if you don't examine this part of your psyche, and you just kind of leave it on automatic pilot,
which most people do,
it will direct your life, right? It'll set the limitations, the kind of relationships you experience, the kind of people you're attracted to and that are attracted to you, et cetera, et cetera. But you'll think it's fate. You'll think it's just the way it is.
Or I'm just meant to be alone. I used to think that all the time. I'm just meant to be alone. I have something very unattractive about me that no man wants. That's how I used to feel. Like, no man wants me. Like, I'm so unwanted. Like, I keep getting rejected. And it was really, really hard. Like, I wish I would have known this back then, is that I had the key inside of me. And so when we look at the inner Adam and the inner Eve, it's kind of like they fit together like puzzle pieces, right? So a woman who, you know, has an inability to relate to her inner Adam, like isn't ready to relate to men, will attract someone who's not ready to relate as well, because they kind of fit together. Or if someone wants to relate to her, she would not find him attractive because she's not ready for that relationship. Like, her heart's not open to it. And a lot of people think that these ideas in your unconscious are just beliefs, like I'm unlovable and I'm not good enough and all those things. But this is what we're really talking about, is a more of a dynamic model, where we're really talking about the quality of the relationship, not what you made up about yourself. Those things come into play, but it's more like, what was the give and take? What was the pattern of relating that you had with your father, the pattern of relating with your mother and father, the pattern of relating with your peers, like what was acceptable? And then you take on those, what's appropriate. Maybe your group of friends acted a certain way and related a certain way, like the tough guys, and then there's the wimps, and then there's the smart people that over-intellectualize. Whatever group you fell into, you start falling in. And then after a while, you're becoming a product of your environment, and you're not really who you were born to. We're all born this, like, unlimited potential, and then we get into this body, and we're so conditioned how to relate, how to act. And then we're kind of like robotic when it comes to dating. We try to think we're making choices, but it's always this automatic attraction.
Right. When we're focused on the external only, then we're talking about the persona, what Jung called the persona. And the persona, of course, it's very useful as it helps get along in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a type of mask that we wear. And so we can think, okay, if I get the right job and I get the right house and the right car, wear the right clothes and get the right partner, of course, that is compatible and fits into my lifestyle, I'll be happy, right? It makes sense. It makes perfect sense, really, from the social perspective. But we know that doesn't work. You can match up people perfectly along compatibility lines, and there won't be any chemistry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll fall in love with somebody that's completely inappropriate for them. And, you know,
and they're like, I remember when I was telling you the other day, my friend, she was dating this guy who flew her to Catalina Island. We just went there. And he took her on a helicopter ride and, you know, 5-star everything. And then she meets her husband, who didn't have any money at all. And she's like, why couldn't I just have chemistry with the rich guy? You know, like, why did I have chemistry with the guy that didn't have money? But she loved him, so she picked him. But it's even those things, like, we can't rely on the persona to create that attraction. And this is why online profile writing and making sure your profile's perfect, and this is what attracts people. This is how to get more dates and triple and double your dating. All those things are, you're just dating more isn't going to change the chemistry. It's like the lucky number. You may end up having chemistry with someone who's okay and willing to have a, you know, a little bit of a relationship. And you may have a, you know, kind of settle. A lot of people do that. They end up just settling for good enough and not really having that great love. And so those things really are persona level. You know, you're just creating
right.
an image of a superficial relationship.
Yeah. So in our model, although it's not therapy, we don't shy away from looking at family history because we know there's an important component there, but we don't see it as your parents screwed you up. That's not what it's about, right? It's simply about examining what did I pick up and how did I interpret those events in my early childhood that now I am playing out unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't examine those, they will be played out unconsciously. You either replicate those situations, right? Like the person that grew up with an alcoholic father and then falls in love with an alcoholic boyfriend or husband. Or you'll do the opposite, right? You can't stand anybody that drinks and you have to find somebody that doesn't drink and is maybe a church goer or something like that.
But then they end up adopting a similar behavior that you had with that relationship.
Well, either way, you're not free, right? Because
yeah.
it's choosing you. I mean, it's forcing you to choose one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want in examining our history, and this goes beyond the family, of course, but we start there. What we want is to be free from those interpretations we made early on so that we can choose, basically. And that's what really creates that chemistry then. If we haven't examined that part of our life, we're going to feel chemistry with somebody that matches what we're defending against that happened early on in the family.
So like an unhealthy chemistry almost. We don't want to say unhealthy, but...
Well, that happens, right? We see people that fall into, for example, abusive relationships...
Mm-hmm.
over and over, right?
They're highly critical people, right?
Yeah, just to keep it light, highly critical people. Or simply that relationships that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because often the blueprint that they got early on or the way they kind of interpreted the situation at home or maybe later on in with their peers and the first love and those kind of things... That interpretation was one about relationships are dangerous and harmful, or the person is liable to leave you and hurt you, break your heart, and so I have to protect myself. Now, this is going on unconsciously, right? And so they choose people, they have chemistry with people that aren't going to get very close to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's
because,
what happened to me.
Yeah, because that protects them, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That nulls the possibility of them being hurt, basically.
So you're saying is that person isn't ready to relate to the opposite sex. So they attract someone who's also not ready to relate to the opposite sex. You get together. You're physically attracted. You have that animus projection. You get all excited. You go sleep together right away. You think you're going to fall in love and this is it. And then 3 weeks or a month or 3 months into the relationship, something happens and it's like you break the spell. The spell's broken, right? You've all experienced that. And then you're back to, oh, God, who's this person? And, you know, it's like almost like the fantasies over. Like I look at the Wizard of Oz, you know, he has that big, I am the great, powerful Oz. And then the curtain goes and there's a little man behind the controls. And you see kind of more the real person. But you're actually not even turned off by them, you're turned off by, you know, some of the things that we do talk about. We won't go into tonight, but the shadow parts of us that we haven't accepted, we start seeing in them. So I want you all to know that when someone rejects you or someone runs away, it isn't because of anything you did. It isn't because you're not pretty enough or, you know, you didn't have the right look or whatever, or intelligence. It's because of this chemistry. It the alignment wasn't there to keep it and sustain it.
Right. So at this point, most people ask, well, can I change my inner Eve or my inner Adam? Right? For the man, it's the inner Eve, and for the woman, the inner Adam. And yes, the answer is yes, you can. That's precisely why we teach this, because it's very possible to transform this part of our psyche. Yeah, so back to the family.
So let's go back to the family.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, it doesn't matter what you experienced in your early family life. I know some of you have had it rough, others not so rough. Doesn't matter. The mind has an incredible capacity to transcend everything that happened, no matter how bad, no matter how good, and create something new, something fresh. That's what this model is about, this Jungian psychology, the spiritual psychology of love, is that it allows us to create our love destiny beyond our personal history or what happened to us. If not, if we don't examine that part, then we're bound to it. We're carrying it around like a ball and chain, right? It's dragging us down. We have to carry all this that emotional baggage with us everywhere we go. But if we examine it, we see that it's simply our mind that created it, that we can transform it.
And when I you know, we all know, you've heard this before, that your family history, your past, you know, dictates your life and how you relate in life. And we've all heard this. This is a psychology 101. This is nothing new. But what I've been taught when I was single and took all these courses was I was trying to fix the past. Like, I was trying to go in the past and heal my little girl and make, you know, kind of put patches of my wounds. And what I was really doing is keeping that past alive. I was rearranging the furniture, making a better persona. And so you have to be careful. A lot of you have heard, oh yeah, I've heard that before. I've done that work before. I've worked on my history. But have you worked on your history where you completely, it doesn't affect you anymore, where it doesn't keep haunting you and you're not just making a better you to compensate? And that's what we tend to do in some of the work that when we're in personal development, we tend to make a better version of ourselves, but it's based on fixing the past. And like you said, we all had great parents. Some of us had not so great parents and experiences. And it really doesn't matter what happened to you. We all have the power to create a life that we want. And the people that... I guess what I'm trying to say is that what happened to you is really a normal experience. So I wanted you to talk about that. The idea that we all think that, oh, if you had an abuse or something terrible happen or an experience, a divorce or someone cheating, that there's something to fix about that. And really talking about that we, as humans, we have all these experiences. It's a normal part of life.
Right. We don't see... most people are not broken in any sense. And I think nobody's really broken. You know, you can't break a human being, basically. The medical idea that kind of a lot of clinical psychology has worked under, it came about from people trying to figure out how to help people that had severe mental health problems or organic brain disorders and those kind of things. And so kind of that model of fixing and healing kind of stayed with psychology for its first 100 years. Then when the self-help movement took off, a lot of the self-help people kind of borrowed from psychology, from clinical psychology. And so what they ended up doing was borrowing therapeutic models, which are medical models, to work on self-help. And that is really not what coaching is about. Coaching is about taking people and seeing them as already whole, as nothing wrong and nothing to fix, really, but simply helping them develop their natural abilities that are already there to an incredible degree, right? Like an athlete going for the Olympics, right? There's nothing wrong with him or her, but the coaching helps them push beyond the limitations of their mind, or their current state of mind.
And you know what I love that you say a lot to people, which is so endearing, is that some people, when they go through the process and they feel like, why do I have all these defenses? Why am I defending from love? Why is my inner Adam the way he is? And you say it's a result of a healthy mind, you know, because a healthy mind knows how to protect itself. So this part of us, the ego, is not bad, and having the persona isn't bad. It's a natural way for us to survive in the world. So what we want to do is move from survival to creativity, right? To create.
Absolutely. And the difference between what we do and most of the work out there is that we are applying a truly non-therapy coaching model. So it's a positive psychology. That is, we're using what we know in psychology, what we know and understand about how the mind works, to develop that inner part of ourselves that helps us connect with each other in a soulful and meaningful way. To me, I mean, there's no better work than this, right? Because it leads us to not only love, really, but to our purpose in life. Because in order to connect with another human being at that soulful level, you need to know who you are. Who are you as a person? What is it that you represent? What are your values? What are you doing here on earth, right? If you don't know that, if you're just a persona, if you're just kind of saying, well, I'm this personality that has a great job and has a great car and house and all that, then the relationship just becomes another commodity that you're adding to your portfolio.
Like a nice purse.
Something like that, right? something that goes with the color scheme, I guess. and there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want, right? But I think most people today, they want something real, and they want something that kind of transcends the romantic comedy paradigm that's out there of falling head over heels in a day or two and.
But you know, no, all movies end that way where they run off, but you never know what happens a year later.
Right.
Well, and I think, too, that one of the things that we, the questions that a lot of people have is when you get into a relationship or you start dating someone, you could have that real cool confidence. And then as soon as you like that person, you start to like the person, it's like you lose your mojo. You lose that confidence. You start becoming needy. So what happens in that state? And guys do this too, where they, you know, they're kind of all tough and cool, and then all of a sudden, I love you, and now they can't get away from you. So what is so that would be related to the inner Adam and inner Eve. Like as soon as that chemistry starts spiraling, it's like you get drunk with infatuation, and you don't think rationally anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah, the research shows that it's very much like a drug. That infatuation releases all kinds of very powerful neurotransmitters and hormones into your system that make you feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you become like addicted to it. And that's the infatuation phase.
And when they drop away, that's when people, I can't get them out of my mind, and they pine over their ex, and it's that,
right,
all that wasted time just for a projection that's not even real. They think it's love, and it's not love.
Yeah. I mean, we can think of love at four different levels. There's the physical attraction, right, that when we see an attractive person, when the man sees an attractive woman, there's a natural attraction, of course, and there's nothing wrong with this. This is part of nature and part of what brings us together. But if we're functioning simply at that level, then it's not going to last very long, of course, beyond the physical attraction. The second level, we can think of it as the romantic level, romantic love, which is it goes beyond the physical attraction, but includes physical attraction, right? It doesn't exclude it,
mm-hmm.
but it transcends it. It's one step higher, where you really care for the person in a romantic sense. You want to be close to them, but most importantly, their happiness becomes important to you.
Versus this physical, where it's just sex and sexual.
Right. At the physical level, at the first stage, it's mainly about your satisfaction. Right, the man's satisfaction. At the second level, the ego starts to loosen up a little bit, because now you're thinking of us as we, and what makes her happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's a third level that also includes the first two. It includes the sexual attraction, includes the romantic phase, but it's even higher than that. We call that conjugal love.
Mm.
Conjugal love is more when a man is ready to get married, get mm-hmm. serious about things. So he sees the woman not only as a sexual partner and a romantic partner, but also as a possible life mate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Somebody to live a life with, a meaningful, create a home, create a family, etc. So that's the third level. The fourth level, if you can believe it, there's even a fourth level.
Wow.
To this.
I can't believe it.
And it includes, again, it includes the first three, but it's a spiritual level. Not spiritual in the religious sense, right? But in the relationship sense.
Mm.
For all of us who have experienced that close relationship with somebody, we know there's a spiritual element there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it gives us a taste of heaven, in a sense of what is it to transcend this mortal body mm-hmm. and ego, and to experience the divine.
Mm-hmm.
At that level, it's really about how can this relationship contribute to the overall betterment of humanity?
Mm-hmm.
Right, it becomes a way of bringing love to the world, not only to the couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only to the family, but kind of expands beyond that.
And so when someone's thinking of what their inner Adam or inner Eve is like, they could look at the quality of the relationships and see what level they're on. And if they've never had that spiritual level of connection, most likely they haven't been in touch with their inner Adam or inner Eve. They just, it's the default, and they kind of go through who they're defaultly attracted to. And some relationships, some people are ready, you know. It's not that everyone is like either on or off with love. Like there's this, you know, you're either in or out. It's more of a spectrum of heart opening. So there's some people that are able to keep someone in their life, but they're not, they don't really go too deep with the person. And then there's like someone who's committed, like a conjugal person who's like committed and they're in the relationship, but they don't really go too deep, or they kind of stay in the romantic, like, oh, you're so great, and I buy you flowers, and but they never really connect on that level. So is that what you're saying with that, that idea of your inner Eve or inner Adam is how you relate to that part of you is the kind of level of relationship that you would have?
That's right. It matches your personal awareness of yourself,
mm-hmm.
kind of your internal journey.
So if you don't go deep with yourself,
that's right. If you don't, if you can't go deep with yourself, in essence, if you can't access and be aware of those deeper elements in you, you're not going to be able to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. Most people think, okay, love, somebody's going to come and love me. They're going to bring this love with them kind mm-hmm. of in these big boxes or something. and I'm going to have access to that love. Well, that's not what happens. It might feel that way. If your heart is closed, you're not going to experience love. Even if there's 100 people lined up ready to love you, you're not going to experience love if your heart is shut down, right? Because it's an internal process. That's what we mean by being in touch with your inner Eve for a man and your inner Adam for a woman. That you're in touch with that part of yourself so that when somebody is open also and ready to love you, you share that with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's really happening. You're sharing that love. It's not that they're bringing it to you. Nobody can give you that kind of experience if your heart is not ready to receive it or to experience it, I should say.
And a lot of people, like I would say, I'm totally ready for love. I love, I'm very emotional. I'm in touch with my feelings. I have done all this work. I'm totally ready. Like, what are you talking about that I'm not ready for love? So what would you say to someone who says that, but always attracts unavailable people?
Right. It's that you're unconscious.
Mm.
Until you make the unconscious conscious, it calls the shots.
And so you look at what you, type of people you're attracting, and it reflect, it'll show you what your inner Adam and that relationship is.
Yes.
Like how you relate to them and how men relate to you is really that inner, mirrors your inner relationship.
That's it. And of course, we don't want to accept that, most of us.
It's not my fault.
Right, because that person hurt me.
Yeah.
It was their fault. They're the ones that cheated, or they're the ones that lied to me. Or
they're afraid of commitment, not me.
Yeah, they ran away or whatever. But they are simply reflecting your unconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're not able to see it, and that, therefore it feels like it's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
But they're simply reflecting your deeper unconscious. So they're essentially a mirror for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're very useful when we understand what's happening. All our past relationships are really useful. And it kind of falls in place once we start doing this work. We start to see why we created those relationships and those kind of relationships and why they ended that way. Because they were reflecting our state of mind at that time.
And so it's so interesting because you, when I was single, it was always, you did something wrong. Like you came on too strong. You were this to the person. You scared them away. You sabotaged the relationship. I've heard it all. Oh, Debbie, you know, there you go again. You sabotaged it. You came on too strong. You're too needy. You shouldn't have told them so much on the first date about yourself, you know. And I'm like, I told them I was a hypnotherapist. Maybe I shouldn't have told them that. And so it really, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter because, you know, a lot of times I think, when someone tells me that, like, oh, I really screwed up. It's like, no, he left not because of that, your behavior. You attracted someone before you even unconsciously that would leave anyway, no matter what you did. So to know that it's nothing you did, like he was attracted to you to run away. Like you were attracted to someone who would run away. So this is such a thing that men and women, they beat themselves up for what they did. And they break up with someone and they ruminate over what they did wrong and what's wrong with them and why can't I get this person back and I should have done this and I should have said this. So this really dispels all that idea and like helps people like, oh, well, like, yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. I mean, it matters, like you said, you're not going to like, you know, you bring an axe to the first date and say you're an axe murderer. I think, you know, you're not going to attract anyone, but within the realms of moral code, you're really not going, you can make all the wrong choices. You can do all the wrong things, but the right person, if it's matched up, won't leave.
Right. And we think about, different cultures, right? Because we work with people from very different parts of the world whose culture is very different than our own. And it still works. So, for example, people that can't date. For example, a woman that can't date.
Mm-hmm.
She cannot actively put up put her face on a dating site and a profile and say, mm-hmm. I'm open to date, mm-hmm. right? Which is now the way people meet nowadays. So what happens to her inner Adam? As she transforms it, that is, as she connects with her inner Adam, the reality will change. The,
mm-hmm.
the people that come into her sphere of attraction will actually change,
mm-hmm.
and reflect that inner Adam change. And we've worked with people that or women, for example, they can't date.
They have to wait for a proposal.
Yeah. And it comes,
mm-hmm.
right? And it actually comes because it's not about out there, right? It's
mm-hmm.
not, the reality is not out there, although it appears to be. It's really our mind, our own heart that we are experiencing.
You know, another example is someone who, you know, this happens often actually, but I remember this one time where a woman came to one of our events and I talked to her like a week or two later and she's like, what did you do to me? I don't know what you did, but now this person I was friends with for 20 years has proposed to me and I said yes and I wasn't attracted to him 2 weeks ago, but something shifted inside of me. So you can actually change the person could be in your life already, and it's just you don't feel that chemistry because you're not ready for that relationship. And so once you shift that readiness inside, the person that you're meant to be with, that's meant for the true you, not the conditioned you, becomes available to you. And then all of a sudden it feels like they're everywhere, you know, like, wow, it just pops out of nowhere. So another question would be, a lot of people talk about rituals. You know, there's this idea that, I know I did this, I put a vision board up and I did these rituals for love. I put red in my, you know, relationship corner and did a little, like, wrote a list of what I wanted and put it in my little box of my wish list and all those rituals. And so do they have any impact on someone, or, you know, how do they work, and is that something you would recommend?
Well, you know, in Italy there's a whole saint and he's got temples or churches dedicated to him. I think it's Saint Anthony,
mm.
who is the patron saint of single people,
mm.
right? And people go to these churches and light candles so that they can find their love and all those kind of things. So it depends on the culture, right, and the ritual. What gives rituals power is their cultural context,
mm.
right, and the faith that the person has in them. So you can't really borrow those kind of things without the cultural context. It won't be, I mean, you might have personal belief in those things, and they might have some placebo effect, right,
that mm-hmm.
I did this, so it's going to work for me. But from a psychological point of view, right, the rituals that are taken out are like uprooted, right? Mm-hmm. It's like uprooting a plant and trying to transplant it somewhere else. If you don't have the right conditions, the kind of the right cultural conditions, it's not going to live and bear fruit like it would in its native soil. So it's the same thing. A lot of people kind of borrow religious or cultural traditions from other places, mm-hmm. and expect it to work. It doesn't because it's kind of out of its cultural ground.
Mm-hmm. You kind of like going through the motions, but your heart's not connected to it.
Right. It doesn't have the power that way. So again, it's kind of focusing on the external also, mm-hmm. on kind of believing that that things are out there, right? That I'm going to pull things in somehow. I'm going to magnetize it, attract it to me somehow. It's kind of a magical thinking, and people have been doing this forever, right? And there's really nothing wrong with it. I would say if it gives you comfort or that placebo effect, maybe it's okay. But real change comes through taking responsibility for our life. Saying, I created these relationships in the past, or my lack of relationships, I've created this.
Mm-hmm.
I might not be completely conscious of why I created these things, but I can find out.
Mm.
That's where our work comes in. And when people take responsibility and they say, I'm willing to do the work, you show me how to do it and I will do it because I'm ready to make changes, then change happens. And it's very possible. Again, because it's a natural process in us.
This isn't something that is manufactured or it's really what we're built to be. Mm-hmm. We came here to become ourselves. We became here to express our true nature. We didn't come here to be robots and fit in and just survive. Like you said, a mouse can survive. We are unlimited beings,
mm-hmm.
that have amazing potential. And to have love on that spiritual level is really incredible. Because then you can build more. Like us being together really helps us impact the world in different ways. Have a bigger, bigger mission.
And we all deserve love.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us kind of fall into self-loathing or low self-esteem and all those kind of things that people talk about. And we start believing that we're not worthy of love or that we don't deserve it or that we did something wrong. We've all kind of done things that we're not proud of and those kind of things, but we can change that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because the capacity to love, to create compassion, to open up our hearts, it's always with us. It was given to all of us. And there's no exception.
And it doesn't have to take a long time. It's the only thing people ask, like, well, how long is this going to take? Is this going to take me years to undo all my past? And really the gauge of transformation comes from your willingness to accept responsibility and resistance. The ego will fight this resistance. And then the last question I have is, and then we'll get to the questions on, is that, the idea that we hear this a lot, like women need to be more feminine. They're so masculine now. They have all this masculine energy. They're doing things. They're not letting anyone take care of them. How does that, from a man's perspective, what a man fall in love, how is that, in your opinion, from a psychological standpoint, and a love standpoint from the inner Eve, what does that mean? Like, should a woman be more submissive? And it feels a little like, for me, 1950s, where you mm-hmm. can't be a powerful woman. You have to play the feminine girl or something.
I know. I mean, is this what people are saying, right? To that you have to be more feminine to go back to the 50s or something and be ready with a martini when the guy comes home or something and wear the apron and all that stuff. I mean, we see worldwide, and this is not only in the Western world, worldwide, women are waking up in mass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the biggest revolution the planet has seen ever, mm-hmm. I would say. And it's a big one. And we need to empower women, and men, of course, to learn how to relate to each other in a more meaningful and new way.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the old structures don't apply anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old systems of marriage are crumbling everywhere. They don't exist in the way our parents lived them out. So people don't know how to relate anymore because there's not that kind of structure anymore,
mm-hmm.
that says, okay, you know, when you're a teenager, you go study, and as soon as you finish high school, get married, start having kids and all that stuff. That's out the window. I mean, that's in other cultures too. We see it in the Middle East and Latin America, everywhere. Those systems are changing. So how do we relate given that those old systems are going? Hold on, let me
change phones here.
Change headsets. And there is no easy answer, of course, but the psychological tools that we provide through this program will help people create something new, something fresh. Primarily, again, because we need each other. Men and women are designed to relate to each other. We cannot create meaningful lives separate from each other, from kind of relating in a meaningful way. So we need to figure out how we're going to relate and create these new structures. Now, in Jungian psychology, which was developed in the Victorian age, and there are a lot of Jungians that are out there that want to keep it the same way, right? Kind of the way Jung stated it in the beginning. They say anything that changes is blasphemous, right? So we're kind of pioneering this idea of using Jungian model, but in a coaching, in a non-therapeutic way. It's really new. So it fits very well with what's going on the planet, this waking up of women and the empowerment of women, because now men have to kind of step up also.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be these women now, or already are, right, that don't fit the old model.
The housewife with the martini and the slippers.
Yes. And so men are in for a big shock if they don't understand this. If they expect kind of the old, I'm looking for my mother kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to find her. They're going to find these incredible women now that are awake,
mm-hmm.
and very empowered. So this model will help us create something new. And it's going to be born out of our individual lives, the way we experience our relationships. But we have to be conscious. And to be conscious, we need these tools. We need to be in touch with those deeper parts of our psyche. And then as we kind of experience relationships at this level, at this conscious level, the new patterns will emerge from that.
And so we use with the model, visualization, like how to access that unconscious, visualization would be one of them, is a way to access the unconscious, and everyone's familiar with that. Visualizations, Carl Jung called it the active imagination. And then what other ways do we access the unconscious? The dreams?
Yeah, certainly dreams, which is one of my favorite topics. And it has long been neglected in psychology. It's one of the ways that we teach this work. Dreams, as Freud said, is the royal road to the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
That what he means is that it's a direct access to the unconscious mind.
And so in the program, we teach you how to look at dreams, how to use them to have access to your inner Adam and the shadow parts, and really showing you where you are in this process, how open you are to love. And people are blown away by the dreams, aren't they? It's like uncanny. It's like this part of your mind that you feel like, wow, something's inside of me that's actually knows me and is watching me and it's feeding me information in the dream. It's really, really amazing. Body. So from a male perspective, Robert, what are your thoughts on the woman being the one who approaches you or the one who confesses her love for you?
Well,
back to
I don't think it's the action that I think it's going to depend on the inner Adam and the inner Eve that's there, right? That's going to determine what it means, not the action. See, that's the big misconception, that we think it's about how what we say or how we act. No, it's again
our beingness.
Yeah, we're saying it's the unconscious content in us, the inner Eve, the inner Adam, that is really going to determine whether there's a connection there or not. So the external, the behavior feels very important and very frightening at times. Like, oh, do I have the courage to say these things? And but it's not going to make that big of a difference in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And then we make it such a big thing.
Yeah, if there's true love there, that is, if there's a deep soulful connection, it's going to work. And if there isn't, you can act perfectly and romantically, and nothing's going to happen.
And you've had men like that who've been the knight in shining armor, and you're like, why can't I feel chemistry with this guy? He's doing all the right things, and it doesn't happen. So last question, what are your methods and processes besides dreams for accessing and changing the unconscious mind?
We use basically three. One is dreams, which is itself like an incredible journey that has many, many layers, a lot more than people think. And we study not only dream interpretation, but dream yoga and lucid dreaming. And some of the advanced areas, we go into some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you coach with us, we teach you a lot of that, those techniques as well. The other one is visualization, which Debbie is kind of a virtuoso at. She creates incredible visualizations that are very specific to working with the inner Adam and the inner Eve, and they go right to the heart of the matter. Those two things now, dreams and visualization, creates that dialogue between our conscious and our unconscious that creates a shift. Jung called that the transcendent function, because we are able to transcend our personal history, our ego, and create something fresh and something new. The third one is really the shadow work. And that is a whole study in itself as well. And it really leads us to transformation as nothing else can. And when we say shadow, we don't interpret it as other people do, as the evil twin or this dark side and all that stuff. There could be some of that, of course, in some people. But really, when we're talking about love, it simply means this personal unconscious that's been ruling our life. And we need to get at that. And then we have specific techniques to do with the shadow work.
And just to give you a last overview, our work really involves the idea that we're all normal. We've all been conditioned to be a certain way in life. And our process helps you step outside that conditioning so you can have a different result in your love life. On behalf of Dr. Robert and I, we want to thank you for joining us for our presentation, What Makes a Man Fall in Love. We hope you enjoyed it. And we hope you take advantage of some of our great courses that we have and also private coaching if you are interested. Just give us a call at 1-877-986-9449 or send us an email. We'd love to hear from you and we'd love to hear some feedback on what you thought of this program. And we wish you a creative love.